Well, good afternoon, Blades fans. We're back again for another instalment of our weekly Sheffield United podcast. Peterborough and transfers are likely to dominate this one. But before that, it was the first win last weekend, James, in 55 days. First home win, I should say. Rhian Brewster, it kind of feels like he was the star of the show a little bit. I've just watched some highlights. It's fair to say he was snatching at plenty of chances before he got that goal.
Yeah, probably to Billy Sharp's frustration at times, I think, watching the game. But no, joking aside, I think it was great to see. First off, it was just nice to watch a football match at Bramall Lane. Almost forgotten what that felt like. Had to get the AA route planner, the sat nav out before setting off to the ground. It had been so long. But listen, of all the faults that you would want Rhian Brewster to have, snatching at chances or taking too many pot shots on goal is probably the one, because that goes to show that his confidence is really high at the minute. He's been on a good run. I think that's 3 goals in 6 games now. But obviously those games have been spread over a period of time for reasons that we won't bore the viewers or the listeners with again. Everybody knows what they are. But I think it was really, really important and really, really good to see Rhian get on target again in what was a good win for Sheffield United, because it goes to show that it's a little bit more than just momentum that he's working with now, isn't it? You know, it's a little bit more than just the fact that, oh, great, I got a goal in the last game, so, you know, my confidence is up now. I think the fact that it was those goals have been staggered over a period, as I said, shows that the penny has dropped with Rhian. So all good for Rhian, and as they chase a place in the playoffs, all good for Sheffield United.
Definitely, Chris. What do you think? This is purely down to Jack Lester and Paul Heckenbottom, this turnaround with Brewster.
It would be unfair to say that he's not got anything to do with it. I imagine there's probably a number of things coming together we said before when he was going through that run of not scoring that it was going to take just that we felt that if he just got one just to lift his confidence then that would do it. Clearly that has finally been the case. We've seen that once he's got one, he got a really good one at Blackburn, and that's kind of he's kind of grown from there. But yeah, I think it would probably, I would imagine having somebody like Jack Lester, who knows what it's like to play at this level, knows what it's like to, Jack made a career out of scoring goals in the, you know, in the 6-yard box. And, you know, I don't think he scored too many. I'm probably going to be proved wrong there, but he's my memories of Jack Lester as a footballer where he's a very much a penalty box striker, and he knew where to be, and his movement was always good, and that's really what. And I think actually why we're talking about how good he's been, I think he still needs to work on this. Rhian Brewster, I think sometimes his movement isn't quite what it should be, but if you've got somebody like Jack and indeed Billy Sharp alongside you to teach you where you should be, then you'll not be too far off learning that. But that's, you know, I'm not obviously not being critical. I think there's just things that he still needs to work on. But given the way he came in, I think we were all expecting the finished article really unfairly whenever he arrived, because United had spent so much money on him, and it was easy to forget that. I think he's only just turned 22, if he even has it all. I can't remember how old he is, but he's still a very young lad who's still learning. And it's clearly, the good thing is he seems to be taking stuff on board now. And as James said there were times before when he wasn't scoring goals that he wasn't taking those pot shots. And that's the difference. And Billy will get wound up about that, but nobody's going to care if Rhian has 5 shots on goal and one of them goes in the back of the net, because that's the most important thing.
I know, I know Billy's game has changed a little bit in recent years, but let's be right as well. Billy's done this probably to enough strikers in his time.
Sure, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Because they're, by their very nature, they're really selfish. So it's probably a little bit of payback for Billy that. But
yeah, a bit of karma for the
I
dread to think how many strikers Billy's done that to you over the years.
Deep down, he'll probably be there'll probably be sort of a begrudging respect for it as well, thinking, you know what, I was a little so-and-so like that when I was younger. But I think you touched on something really important there, actually, Chris, as well, and that is that when you look at the story of Rhian Brewster at Sheffield United, I think context is so important. And this, again, is taking nothing away from Jack and Paul, because I think they've worked with Rhian, as Slavisa Jokanović worked with him as well when he was here. So I think, you know, he's benefited from sort of a wealth of knowledge there from all three of those players, but sort of different insights as well. And maybe it's piecing all of those things together that have made a very nice sort of jigsaw puzzle for Rhian. But I think when you look at him, listen, Rhian Brewster was always a very, very good footballer. You don't spend time at Chelsea's academy if you're a dud. You don't get signed by Liverpool and spend time in their academy if you're a dud. You don't win what he's done with England at youth level and stick around in the young line setup for so long if you're a dud, under a number of different coaches, by the way. But I think sometimes, as you said, Chris, because it was a big fee for Sheffield United, it wasn't a big fee in terms of Premier League football, and it certainly won't have been a big wage bill, a big wage package, sorry, in terms of Premier League football, which is the big thing now at the highest level. It's not transfer fees, it's wages, it's what you can actually pay players. But at the same time, when Rhian arrived from Liverpool, we weren't talking about sort of a Robbie Fowler or a Michael Owen here who got, you know, 50, 60, 70 games under his belt in the first team at Anfield, who was playing on a regular basis for Liverpool. We were talking about a player who was sort of on the cusp of the first team and hadn't quite broken into it yet. So what Sheffield United were buying was obviously talent, but more than that, they were buying potential. And potential something that you have to work with and be a little bit patient with as well.
Speaking of potential, obviously we know that Brewster was up front with Sharp last weekend. He finished the game up top with Ollie McBurnie. Daniel Jeberson, obviously we spoke to Paul Heckenbottom yesterday, James. He was non-committal on the question about whether he'd recall Jeberson. What do you think the chances of a partnership between those two are, Brewster and Jeberson, perhaps before the end of this season?
Do you know what? I think going forward, listen, that's a really exciting prospect, isn't it? A really, really exciting prospect. Two young strikers who, you know, have both got sort of the potential to go on and play Premier League football, you would think, you know, within them. I think personally, listen, as you said, Steve, Paul left that door open. And you said it was going to be sort of decided today or tomorrow whether or not to leave Daniel at Burton. Do you know what? Personally, I really hope we don't see that partnership actually this season, because I think Daniel is doing really well at Burton. He's playing regular first team football, which was the whole point of the exercise, you know, to send him there in the first place. And I don't see him playing on a regular basis for Sheffield United. I get what Paul Heckenbottom said about possibly bringing him back and looking to integrate him within the squad. I get the fact that Lees Moussai, clearly not being fit, has probably left them short of a striker. But there isn't a great shortage of strikers up there. I mean, I know, again, there's that sort of threat of COVID-19 possibly wiping out a front line. But, you know, there comes a point when you can't just start stockpiling players because, you know, you might suffer an outbreak at the training camp. Otherwise, you probably never go into training. You just tell the players never to play a game, just stay at home and let's postpone everything and ride the entire pandemic out. I think what Daniel is gaining working under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who was, fair to say, a pretty damn good striker in his day, I think that's worth his weight in gold. I really, really do. I think he'll be learning so much there. playing under Jimmy, working under Jimmy. I'm sure Jimmy's pulling him to one side during training for his own reasons, as well as Daniel's, you know, giving him little sort of snippets of information. I did this, I did that. He'll be getting so much from that. So I personally, unless Paul Heckingbottom has it in his mind to say, right, as of next week, my front line is Rhian Brewster and Daniel Jebison. I really hope he stays. Mm-hmm. Sheffield United have got some good strikers coming back. I know some people might disagree with this, but I still believe Ollie McBurney's got a big role to play at United as well, between now and the end of the season, and hopefully beyond that as well. So, yeah. Fingers crossed we see that partnership, but not until next season.
Somewhere down the line, I get it.
I think, to be fair, it would put unfair pressure on Jebison as well. Because as you said there, Heggie would have to bring him in immediately and put him in and go, right, you want to stay in this team, you're going to have to hit the ground running, really. And that's a really unfair thing to do, because otherwise, you either do that and give him a chance to do it and play him every week, which could be difficult because it might take him a while to settle in. He's been playing at a lower level all season. Or you put him on the bench and he's getting 10 minutes here and there when he could be down the road playing, you know, starting games and playing full matches every week. I think, as James said, I think it would be... I don't think it would be good for anybody, really, for him to come back at this stage. You might as well let him see the season out there and then bring him back in the summer and go, right, this is what we're doing. This is what our plans are. Billy's another year older. McGoldrick's another year older. McBurney, we don't really know, you know, fitness-wise or whatever. I'm starting the season with Rhian and Daniel Jebison. And
I think as well, yeah, you... Just two sort of more points that I think are really important here. I think, you know, personally, I think Daniel would want to stay at Burton, because I thought, you know, for a teenage lad who, let's be honest, even by the end of last season when he, you know, played some Premier League games, has still got virtually no senior footballing experience on his CV. I thought he showed real maturity to force through that move to Burton, because make no mistake about it, you know, I mean, there were some other potentially more attractive sort of clubs, potentially more sort of glamorous clubs who were in for Daniel. But make no mistake about it, he was the one who really pushed for that move to Burton because he wanted to work under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. I think he realised, you know, what that could bring and what that could add to his game. So I thought there was a real maturity from Daniel there. But the other thing that Paul mentioned and Chris has quite rightly touched on there is the reason that Paul seemed to suggest was the most important one, or possibly the one that might persuade him to bring Daniel back, was because he wanted to work on integrating him into Sheffield United's team. Well, let's look at Sheffield United's fixture list next month. I think they play 7 games in February. There will be no time to do that. There will be no time to integrate Daniel Jebison into a sort of a training pattern, into a tactical pattern, because purely all Sheffield United will be doing for the next 4 weeks or so is just preparing for a game, boom, rest. Prepare for a game, rest. There won't be any long-term work going on at the training ground. It will purely be about rest, recovery, and then preparation for a particular game. So I don't even see how they could do that work. Although, listen, clearly, Paul, Jack Leicester, and Stuart McCall have obviously forgotten more about coaching than I'll ever know. But I just don't see it.
Yeah, we're live on Facebook and Twitter, by the way. So if you've got any opinions or questions you want to get in about Jebison or anything else, just give us a shout. Chris, transfer strategy came up yesterday. Paul Heckingbottom suggested that one of the reasons why they haven't got a defender in yet is because, in part, they've been a bit slow and other clubs have nipped in. And then he seems to suggest there's been a change of tact from perhaps going for a permanent addition to now a loan move, and there's only a budget for that at the minute. Can we read between the lines a little bit about potentially, I know he said he was frustrated, but Are there anything else you think we can glean from those comments?
I don't think you have to. you have to work pretty hard to read between lines, to be honest.
They're not the toughest dots to join, are they?
No, we're not. We're not talking a Da Vinci Code here. No, it's clearly Paul has seen what it's like to be in a transfer window at a club the size of Sheffield United. You know, his experience, I suppose, at this kind of thing has been at Leeds, which was a shambles. I mean, he may not have been in a window at that point, but let's say it was, without thinking back. Hibs, which is a completely different market. Barnsley at a time before they kind of moved up and had the strategy that they have now. This is a completely, I wouldn't say alien concept, but it's very different to what he's been used to, Paul. And expectation is much higher from supporters. And unfortunately, from what we can see at the minute, reading between the lines, as you say, is that there's clearly not much of a budget there for bringing players in. And going from trying to sign players, which we expected to be the case because they put a bid in for John Souter at Hearts, to now turning around quite late in the window. And I mean, the same we're talking about quite late in the window. The window didn't creep up on anyone. You know, everybody knew it was going to be in January. Yeah. So this strategy should really have been in place November. Well, certainly whenever Paul Heckenbottom took over from Jukanovic. So it just seems like there's been a change where they're going, right, we're going for loans now. And once you start doing that, then you become ever more desperate. And teams will hold on thinking, well, actually, we might be able to get a bit more out of them for this because they're desperate. Or they might say, well, actually, if United are coming in for them, that maybe somebody else will come in for them and might get a bit more money, a better deal, should say. A bit more money is not necessarily the best phrase, but a better deal for the club who are loaning out. And it also puts other clubs on alert that, you know, this is what United are going for. Maybe we'll go and try and nick one off them to strengthen them and obviously weaken potentially United as well. So as a strategy, it looks like there is no strategy at all, or indeed they're certainly changing their mind far too late and making things far too difficult for themselves, to the point where actually I would be stunned if they signed somebody.
Wow. You also committed the cardinal sin of mentioning the S word in front of James. James, is there anything you wanted to add on that?
No, I'm going to say not really, but then yes, because I'm going to sort of waffle on again for probably a couple of minutes. But I think the troubling thing for me, or the thing that sort of concerns me the most here, is it's not the fact that they've not brought anybody in yet, because that can happen. And I think everything that Paul mentioned about this being a slow window was right because of the COVID-19 pandemic and teams not wanting to leave themselves short. And, you know, obviously there's been a financial effect lower down the footballing pyramid because of everything that's happened. The thing that bothers me the most here is something that, when, if you look at the timeline, if you look at the chronology of the things that Paul has said throughout the transfer window, as Chris said, at the beginning of the window, Sheffield United's coaching staff and recruitment department, you've only got to look at the players that they were interested in. You've only got to look at the fact that John Souter was invited down to Bramall Lane to be shown round. There was no suggestion that Hearts were going to be loaning John Souter out So Sheffield United's coaching staff were clearly working on the assumption that they were going to be able to make a permanent signing. And those take time to do, especially when you're looking at players where, you know, good players who are inevitably going to be attracting interest from elsewhere. So that takes time. But it's the fact that then a week or so later, after Sheffield United's recent match at Preston, then Paul Heckingbottom said, he made a comment where he said it would be a lot easier if I was actually working to a budget. So clearly by that point, he wasn't entirely sure how much money had been sort of made available to him. And Sheffield United have saved quite a bit in this transfer window by allowing Robin Olsen to go to Aston Villa. So that's taken a fair chunk of change off the wage bill, you would think, because they've brought Adam Davies in, but I don't believe for one minute that Adam will have been earning at Stoke City anything near what Robin Olsen's earning at AS Roma, his parent club. And now it's gone on to, he said on Thursday, there is no budget for a permanent signing. So he's clearly now got his budget, but the budget obviously isn't anywhere near the one that he thought it was at the start of the window. So I think the thing that really sort of disappoints me about this, and listen, Sheffield United don't have to impress me, but it's just the fact that there doesn't seem to have been a great deal of communication behind the scenes here. And I'm sure if they'd have known that they were working towards a loan signing, I'm sure Sheffield United would have had one in the building by now. The one thing, of course, none of this changes the fact is they desperately, desperately, desperately need a centre-half, and they need a good centre-half as well. I think the interesting thing is there's a lad on loan, obviously did very well, as Sheffield United fans all know, from Chelsea at Huddersfield. And when Huddersfield did that deal together, put that deal together with Chelsea, some clubs won't demand a loan fee. I know Chelsea effectively placed him at the John Smith Stadium because they wanted him to develop and they liked the package. They liked the proposals that Huddersfield had made. So they allowed him to move for effectively ditto. And I think Huddersfield aren't paying anything for him or weren't paying anything for him at that time, because the only time the financial penalties kicked in was if he'd have been available for selection for five or six games or whatever and hadn't taken part in any of them. But the problem Sheffield United have got now, of course, is there's no point in bringing in somebody from Chelsea's under-23 squad or Arsenal's under-23 squad because of the position that they're in. They're chasing the playoffs. They want somebody. They need somebody with first-team experience to provide cover for the only three centre-halves they've got, which is a problem when you are playing with three centre-halves at the back. So, you know, if they're going to go out and bring somebody in from a development squad, well, quite honestly, they may as well say to Kyron Gordon and Reece Norrington-Davies, you lads just fill in the gaps, because at least they'll be getting something long-term out of it themselves then. But no, just going back, it's just that lack of communication that I think has been disappointing.
Yeah. Stay with you, James, for a couple of questions. Christopher Barton, what's happening with Morgan Gibbs-White? There's nothing concrete saying that he's coming back. I think that's what he means. There was some good news on that yesterday, wasn't there, from Heckenbottom?
Yeah. I mean, Morgan's still obviously coming back from his injury. It sounds as if he's still a couple of weeks away from a return to action. So it was clearly more serious than anybody first thought. But Paul Heckingbottom did say explicitly, listen, as things stand, and I would imagine the as things stand bit is unless Morgan Gibbs-White has a setback in training that means he's ruled out for the rest of the season, in which case there's obviously no point in paying for him to stay at Sheffield United on loan, that everybody at Sheffield United, everybody at Wolves and Morgan Gibbs-White himself were working on the theory that he'll be back and seeing out the season at Sheffield United. So I think it's just a case of making sure he gets fit now as quickly as possible, because as much as Sheffield United need another centre-half, I think if they are going to qualify for the playoffs or give themselves a really good chance of doing that, and then importantly, getting out of the playoffs, because they'll be playing obviously some of the best teams in the Championship this season, obviously in those, they need Morgan Gibbs-White.
Yeah. One more question quickly. How's Jack O'Connell doing? I think the short answer to that is he's not going to be back anytime soon. I think Heckenbottom mentioned it was more long term still, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. There's no real news on Jack, unfortunately. I don't think I think it's fair to say we won't be seeing Jack this season.
Yeah, Chris, departures. I know Hecky said he doesn't want to lose any more. He's only got 16 fit and available outfield players. But are there any obvious contenders you think might be off before Monday?
No, I don't think so. You might see a couple of the young lads going out to possibly non-league on non-league loans, so that we've seen a bit more of this. The non-league, I nearly said conference again. I do that every week. The National League clubs seem to be benefiting from the circumstances, really, in that clubs are more willing to let their players go off to top-end National League clubs than they are to League Two, because they are able to call them back anytime they like. So United could send out a couple of their under-18s or a couple of their under-23s to, say for talk's sake, Chesterfield, and knowing that worst-case scenario, they can pull them back anytime they like. So we might see a couple of the young lads. I don't know anybody particularly, to be honest, who I think they probably all benefit from that in some way, but I don't know if there's anybody specific who would do that, but I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of them went out on loan. I can't see anybody else. Can't see any of the kind of fringe players going anywhere, because, as you said, Paul Heckenbottom only had 16 outfield players yesterday in training, which is not enough, really. So it would take something absolutely spectacular. Who's to say? You never know. I'm not trying to talk up our deadline day coverage, but you just never know. Somebody may come in and say, here's 10 million for Ollie McBurney or something. You know, that just as a pure example, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And if something like that was to happen, then the people with the money at United are going to think, well, are we in a position to turn that down? And probably the short answer, given what we've been talking about for the past half hour, is absolutely not.
Yeah. We'll move on to Peterborough tomorrow, James. Biggest win of the season against them last time out. It's going to be an easy match, isn't it?
Probably not, because Sheffield United don't do things the easy way, do they? I think that's one thing that we can all agree on. Listen, I know Paul Heckenbottom has talked Peterborough up. I think he was quite right to do so. He made the point that they're a team that have a go. They're not going to sit in. Then, you know, and interestingly enough, he sort of suggested that was possibly one of the reasons why they are in the relegation zone, because they do have a go. They do look to go toe-to-toe with teams. So, the chances are Peterborough will create chances. They've got some good players in that team, but when all said and done, they are in the relegation zone, and they're in the relegation zone for a reason. And so if Sheffield United are, you know, serious and are equipped to qualify for the end of season playoffs in the Championship, let's not make any bones about it. This is a match that they should be winning.
Yeah. Chris, it's hard to disagree with that, isn't it? They've just got to start winning more games against the likes of Peterborough. And I know that might sound a bit snobby, a bit arrogant, but it's true.
Well, I think they just need to win more games full stop, really. They're in a position now where they just need to go on a bit of a run where they're picking up points on a absolutely consistent basis. I mean, the league, we've said that the league isn't as strong as it has been in the past, but it's still a difficult league no matter what. It's still every single match that you come up against is going to be a challenge. But they need to be in a position now where they are picking up maximum points, maybe 3 out of 5 games or so, you know, in somewhere along those lines, because they can't afford to fall off the pace. And we're starting to see Forest are in really good form. West Brom appear to be dropping down a little bit. So we're starting to see things kind of changing around that kind of if you imagine a kind of six between third and ninth, where I think that's going to start changing around a little bit over the next month or so. And Sheffield United need to be within touching distance of that, really, so that they can make a move. I don't know whether they can do that because we haven't seen it yet, but they need to start showing that.
Yeah, we'll leave it there for today, but make sure you stay up to date with all of our Sheffield United coverage at thestar.co.uk over the weekend, as well as on Monday for a busy one. See you soon.